this workshop to order. Would everybody please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I want to welcome everybody and thank you for coming. Next on the agenda is roll call, and we have all the council here tonight. So now we'll go to current business 2.01, question and answer meeting with State Representatives Susan Fagan and Joe Schmick for funding of city public works and projects. I don't know how you want to proceed, the two of you, but Representative Susan Fagan around, and Larry and I, and showed her our projects and talked about them and things like that, so she has a good understanding of what's going on. And then Joe, of course, just arrived. I posed a couple questions ahead of time so the council understands. So if you think of other questions, what's happening in the state budget related to cities? That was one of the questions I asked. Will there be help? Of course, that was a question. What's the future of the Public Works Trust Fund is another question I had. So if any council members, as they're going through, have questions, feel free to ask them. Representative Schmidt, go ahead.
Well, thank you, and thank you so much for asking us to come down. I apologize I wasn't here to see your projects that you have in queue earlier, but I work, too, so sometimes it's kind of hard to get away. The Public Works Assistance Account I'd like to give you a little background so you understand everything about it. It gives low-interest loans to cities, counties, and other organizations. So how is it funded? Well, part of the money from the REIT, real estate excise tax, funds it. Some money from the solid waste tax, and then money from the public utility tax, and then of course loan repayments. All four of those funding sources go into this pile of money that the Public Works Assistance Fund makes up. Now, I guess the problem is, and you ask it, what are the alternatives? Because you've heard that we swept the fund. That is true. That was one of the ugly portions of the budget that we just passed. I'm not going to kid you, that was hard to stomach. But to give you a little history, in the 2009-11 budget, the entire fund was swept to the tune of $509 million. Because that money sits there in that pile and everybody sees it. And I will tell you one thing I've learned being in Olympia. It is extremely difficult to keep a pile of money from not being touched. Very difficult. So in 9/11, $509 million was taken. In 11/13, there was a partial sweep of $80 million. And then in this year's budget, it was swept $354 million. Out of that account, of which we went back then and backfilled by selling bonds. And that's another, in my opinion, bad idea, using the state's credit card to basically fund the state's budget. We're going to pay 25 years in those bonds to fund that. But the reason why we did that is so that any project that was already started didn't stop. It could be continue on. But the bad news is that there won't be any new projects for the next 2 years, period. Just there won't be any money for that. There will not be any projects taken on. Now, this is a statutory fund, meaning it was set up by the legislature, by rule or by law, which means that it only takes a simple majority, 50% plus one, to sweep it. One of the things that I know that we've talked about in our caucus, and I believe that Representative Warnick is going to drop a bill to to make this constitutional, to make it 2/3 vote before we can sweep these funds, which in concept I agree wholeheartedly, because it is just way too easy to sweep these piles of money for what they're intended for out of those accounts. And I do support that concept and that idea. I'd like to read the bill before I say I'm going to support it, because I always want to read the stuff before I sign on the bill. But we've got to make it harder to take the money out of these items. So what are some of the solutions? Well, we could institute a new tax, come up with a way to tax something else, but there's no guarantee that that money would stay there either. You know, once the pot builds up with money, we hit hard times, we won't take it. So that's really not a good idea. We could have privately and publicly funded projects, which there's some issues. We still haven't kind of got our hands wrapped around. So, and I think it would be very difficult for a smaller city to do that. So that really isn't an option. I think we need some constitutional protections to protect these funds. I really do. This idea of sweeping these funds continually just has to stop. It's not accomplishing what it was for. And I do have a challenge for you guys. When we were arguing this, because this was a last resort for us to sweep these funds, the lobbyists who represent the cities and counties, I will tell you, were strangely quiet. We didn't hear one word from them. I would be taking that up with your associations, of why they were so quiet. Why did they didn't help us fight that? Because that, to me, just that's wrong. They should have been in there battle, but they weren't. They were pretty quiet. I would ask, you should ask them, why? Why were you so quiet when we were fighting them? That's the bottom line. Now, I'm going to give you more bad news. Including in this bill that was passed, I'm going to read here some of these things, because it's important that you hear that we've tied up money not only for this biennium that we're in now, but future bienniums, and this is the way that it happened. The solid waste tax, we tied into that in the future until 16 and 18. We tapped into that fund, so it'll feed back into the general fund. In addition, all but 2% of the REAP money through fiscal year 2019 went into the Education Legacy Trust account, which I know that my seatmate will be able to explain. So we've tied up the funding sources for the Public Works Trust Fund for several years, not just 13-15, but for several years out. And a lot of this was done because of the extra money that had gone into the schools for the McCleary decision. And my seatmate is well versed on this, and I'll let her tackle that. But that was the reason why so much of these funds were swept and into the future. And that's where the money went. There's not going to be a lot of help coming for the cities in the next few years. That's just the bad news. You're just the first of many cities that are going to ask the same questions that we're getting now. And there's not good answers coming in the future. Representative Fagan, would you like to tackle the McCleary just so that they understand the ramifications here? Yeah, and why this all happened?
Well, as you know, everything is always about balancing what we're going to do, and there's always a group of people. Some of our colleagues proposed huge new tax increases this year. And then there were those of us, I mean, Representative Schmick and I represent a district that's full of pretty conservative people. You take the city, for example. It's, you're not really big into borrowing lots and lots of money. I mean, you have a reputation for saving up money for projects. And, I mean, this building's going to be paid off in 2 years. I mean, that you have a lot to be proud of, the way you manage the resources that the taxpayers provide you. I wish we could take that kind of credit in Olympia. There probably are more people that want to spend a lot more money. So Joe is right. Do we pass new taxes at a time when our economy is really just barely recovering? I mean, we talked about this earlier, that the recession officially ended in June of 2009, but almost every community, really almost every community I go into, I run into people who say they still don't feel like the recession is over. And I think you were somewhat protected from the depths of it because you have such a strong agricultural-based economy here. And on every opportunity I get, I give a shout out to the ag industry, the processors, the growers, because without them, through this terrible recessionary time, we'd have been way worse off. Fortunately, we have markets around the world, and we have great products, and we have ways to get those products to market. So Joe mentioned something called the McCleary decision, and that seems to be on the lips of just about every school district, every teacher, even every even a lot of reporters. I was criticized in a West Side article for saying I thought we did a pretty remarkable job of putting over $1 billion worth of new funding in K-12 education this year. I still believe that. That person can criticize me all he wants, but when you're talking about all the wants and all the needs of a state, the size of ours, public safety, those most vulnerable, higher ed, transportation, the fact that we were able to add $1.3 billion in addition to what we were going to spend on K-12 education, I still say that's remarkable. We had to do it. We have until 2018, according to the Supreme Court's McCleary decision, we have until 2018 to fully fund K-12. To fully fund basic education, because the Constitution says it's our paramount duty. And the ruling of the Supreme Court, not only did they rule, but they kept a hand in the decision, and they've kept a hand in how we are going to implement it. And I serve on a task force that's responsible for writing a report every single year until 2018, saying, the court is demanding, what are you doing to meet the McCleary decision? And again, I will say, I think we did well, but there were those who ended up shortchanged. And I would actually use that word, because when we sweep something like the Public Works Assistance Account, something that today I heard that you have some projects that were depending on it, and now you've just heard Representative Schmick say that there probably isn't going to be any loans made out of that because there isn't going to be any money in there for several years to come. So not only did the Supreme Court tell us that we had to fund public education, but that we have to figure out a reliable source of revenue. And I think we could all agree that probably the Public Works Trust Fund is not a reliable source of funding for public education. So you can see what potentially is on our plate. Now, if you think I'm saying we got to raise taxes, I'm not saying that at all. One of the things I am saying is we need to do everything we can in Olympia, the legislature and the governor and his people, to do things that make it easier to do business in this state instead of chasing businesses away by having, I just read it, we have the highest workers' compensation rate in the nation. We have among the top three highest rates of unemployment insurance. We do have the highest minimum wage in the nation. And granted, you know, when you're talking to people who are trying to live off of minimum wage or even a couple of jobs that pay minimum wage, I understand that. But minimum wage tends to be for those workers who come to you with no experience. They come to you with no experience, and you teach them and you start them out. We've talked and had legislation introduced to have something called a starting wage or a learning wage, or, you know, someone that you've just hired, because nobody, I mean, it's very difficult for young people to find jobs starting out because nobody can afford to hire someone for almost $10 an hour with no experience, and you're going to have to teach them as well. So we could do better. We have some stringent regulations, I believe, in that you can have a very healthy economy and still have an environment that's well taken care of. It's not an either or. And if you have a good economy, there is more funding to take care of our environment, and there will be more funding for schools. So I'm all for growing the economy, and I'm all for easing some regulations, and I'm also for changing some of our workers' comp. I mean, the state has the state controls workers' comp. And in other states, there are options. There are private options for workers' comp. But we haven't been able to pass a bill to allow a third party to come in and offer workers' comp. Hey, if you still want to buy workers' comp from the state, go ahead. But let's bring in another party and see if they can offer it for less. Something tells me other states are doing that, and that's good. So when it comes to McCleary, I'm not going to tell you. It's not all in our hands and our control, because the Supreme Court, for the next 5 years, is going to expect a report from us every single year, and they're going to want to know what we're doing. How are you meeting the state's paramount duty? So I say important to grow the economy, and our job as legislators is to do everything we possibly can to help make that happen. So that's probably all you want to know about McCleary.
No, I have a question on McCleary. My understanding is McCleary was, when that was decided, it was almost a $5 billion decision. Pretty close, wasn't it? With the total that it would be, or
well,
cost?
Well,
and
it depends on who you ask. I mean, sure, it could be five, it could be eight, it could be ten.
Yeah.
What we've tried to do as the task force that's worked on it is to keep the definition of basic education exactly what the Supreme Court said. And four things the Supreme Court mentioned specifically. We added dollars as a legislature beyond all-day kindergarten, MSOC, which is material supplies and operating costs, increased instructional hours for 7 through 12, and that fourth one is transportation, which all four of those are considered part of basic ed. And then we added additional dollars in our report that we sent to the Supreme Court, documented those. So if we just talked about those four items that the Supreme Court specifically mentioned in the decision. You know, it's, like I said, it's somewhere between $4, $5, $6 million. But if you talk to someone like, oh, Randy Dorn, the superintendent of public instruction, he's accusing us he gave us the grade of incomplete. And sometimes I wonder, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. $1.3 billion additionally, it just seems to me like that's being overlooked. I mean, we scraped together. We swept the Public Works Trust Fund. And
see, because that was my concern. If you had to really scrape the barrel just to get the 1.3 million, and the decision, was, you know, could run in the 5 to 6 billion. There's nothing left there to scrape to meet the needs of.
We all do. I believe we have quite remarkable schools. We have quite remarkable teachers. We have quite remarkable administrators. And so my question is, how much more, you know, do we commit? I mean, we're on a trajectory to meet what the Supreme Court is demanding of us. But guess what else? We want to do that. We want to make sure our schools are funded well. And the districts will tell you that they had to, you know, do some scraping the bottom of the barrel themselves over the past few years. But so have you, and so have families, and so have businesses, and none of us have been immune to the recession. And what we need to do is everything in our power to let business thrive so they'll be willing to stay here and hire more people and expand. I just read today in the Seattle Times that Boeing is sending more of their engineering folks to California out of Washington. Hello, that is a wake-up call. That is a message. And I'm not saying we should do everything Boeing wants us to do, but the kinds of reasons that Boeing is leaving Washington are the same reasons that other businesses aren't growing and thriving here. Very same reasons.
I have another question. Is there a figure for basic education per student? You figure in their materials, papers, pens?
Yes, and that's how we came to the part of the way that we came to how much additional money we were going to put in. Our school districts have really been concerned because we are not paying what it costs to transport kids. I know you guys want to talk about city stuff, and we're kind of ended up talking quite a bit about education, but I'm really happy that you have some interest because I do want you to feel good about what we're doing. Are any of you on a school board? A school board member? Because those guys have lots of information that they'll share with you. Are you? Yes. I mean, it can be kind of frustrating too, but as Joe pointed out, the Supreme Court mentioned those four things, and so we're making sure that we address those. And there's a per pupil dollar amount. Everything is based on how many kids are you expecting in your school, and then the apportionment. Your apportionment is based on that. And there are a number of other programs. There's the transitional bilingual program is a very big program for Othello and for North Franklin District and some of the districts, Basin City, some of the districts on this side of the 9th District. So there's additional funding beyond the apportionment that each district receives. So I think we're spending quite a bit per pupil. And I think all the criticism you see is like, we're not doing something right with schools. I think we see so much criticism that we forget that I will tell you in the 9th District, I have seen really great schools and great leaders and test scores improving. So if you take anything away from the things that we've said tonight, I hope you feel good about what's going on in our schools, at least in, I can't speak for other districts, but certainly for the 9th District. Parents are very involved. We have mostly small schools, which I think is a tremendous advantage for us, because smaller schools, parents know all the teachers know the parents, they know the principals and the superintendent. And you go to games, and it isn't just football games, basketball games. You're not seeing just parents there. The towns turn out. So you guys always have a great football team. We saw them practicing today. So I do want you to feel like we're doing some good things in our schools. Can we do better? Yep, we can do better. We'll be doing better.
Well, thank you for coming. I don't know if more council members have questions. The reason I wanted two representatives to come is because we're starting our budget process. So, you know, it's going to help us take a look at what we're going to do next year and how we're going to do it. And thank you, Joe, for being so candid about it, black and white. I appreciate that, because we want to know. As a city, as a community, we want to know. If there's no money, then there's no money. That's fine. And we know how to prepare for the future.
I just got a comment on your, you were talking about the minimum wage, and I believe that our minimum wage is too high. There's a lot of small businesses, they can't afford to pay that much for somebody that doesn't know anything yet. And maybe, like you were talking, a starting wage or training wage, that would be a lot better than starting somebody out at almost $10 an hour.
If you guys can do anything over this next session, be really active in encouraging the legislature to do the right thing for our economy. I mean, you could, maybe your council can't, maybe your association can't, they would be smart to, but to support a training wage, that would really help our youth. I mean, our youth employment is very, very low. And when I used to serve on the labor committee and I asked the question, what was the reason? Why is our youth employment so low? You know, the answer is because we have a very high starting wage. And I don't think it's unreasonable to ask for a training wage. We can't even get that bill out of the labor committee. So, thank you for paying attention to that. I think that's really incredibly important. And just a final note, upcoming session is going to be the session on transportation. And I think you maybe saw this week that the governor is finally saying that a transportation package doesn't have to have the Columbia River crossing in it. That's the boondoggle of a bridge between that nobody in Vancouver wanted. the town of Vancouver. They did not want it. It didn't improve their travel time. It didn't improve their commute. It improved their commute time, let me take that back, by 20 seconds. And it was going to cost a fortune. And there were no benefits. The people of Vancouver and the people in Clark County said, we don't want that Columbia River crossing. So I think it's important to note that the governor did acknowledge that a transportation package doesn't have to have that bridge in it. We might have very well gotten a transportation package this past session. I mean, no one will know, but there was just people digging their heels in saying, you've got to fund that bridge. You've got to fund that bridge. So if that's off the table in discussions, then you're going to see a transportation package. It's, you know, who knows what fees and maybe some additional gas tax might be. And I'm not on the transportation committee. I can't quite delve into those pieces yet. But even a transportation package is helpful to our economy. Because if we can't move goods and people, we can't get our goods to market. So I would be watching for that. And I think that's a positive for all of us.
Any other questions, Councilor? Well, thank you, Representative Schmeck and Representative Fagan, for coming. We appreciate it. I know both of you are workers, so you're not just representatives. And if you need to leave, feel free. But we do appreciate you coming and giving us the story, what's happening in the state and as far as cities. And we'll be looking at the budget when we do that way. So, again, thank you very much for coming. Mm-hmm. Thank you for coming again. Okay, 2.02, presentation by Washington City Insurance Authority, WCIA. Lisa.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Council. thank you for inviting me to come and speak to you about our insurance authority and what we do for you. I just wanted to let you know that my name is Lisa Roberts, and I'm the Risk Services Manager for Washington City's Insurance Authority. And we were formed back in 1981 during the hard insurance market. And basically, that was a time when municipal government really wasn't a very good risk. And commercial insurance companies wanted to basically dump us and didn't want to insure us. So they effectively priced us out of the market. They doubled and tripled our premiums, and I was a risk manager in a school district at that time, and my premium for the school district tripled in price. So nine city managers actually got together in the Puget Sound area and went to the legislature and asked them to pass legislation to allow local government to self-insure. And out of that, we were able to pass RCW 4862 and 3934. And the Washington City's Insurance Authority was born. At that time, it was called Puget Sound City's Insurance Authority. And from that, we grew to today 162 members statewide. And obviously, our name was changed back sometime in the 90s to represent our statewide membership. So I guess the thing that I would really like you to know is that WCIA is really different than a commercial insurance company, because we're not a commercial insurance company. We are an interlocal agency of member districts or member cities. I'm a government employee, just like the city of the fellow staff are. And so we're not in it to make a profit. We're in it to help our members reduce their losses. And so we have a little bit of a different philosophy. We perform an insurance function in a municipal way. We understand how you budget. We do the same thing. We are audited by the state auditor. We are a local governmental agency. We also make sure that our members are in control of all of our operations. We are governed by our membership. Every one of our 162 members are full voting members. They're required to come to one of our three board meetings a year. And because they are actually the ones who do business. Out of that full board, we have an executive committee that meets monthly to approve authority for claims and basically run the pool. So that's a little different than a commercial insurance company as well. We minimize our reliance on the insurance industry. We have a $4 million self-insured layer. That's the largest in the state, and one of the largest in the nation, actually. And we have all control over that $4 million self-insured retention. And so we can look for coverage, not exclusions. We're not subject to a commercial insurance carrier saying, no, we're not going to do that. We want you to settle that. We have total control over that. So that means that we can be aggressive in our litigation. We have gone to the U.S. Supreme Court 5 times and won. And that's important for municipal government because we need to set good case law, and we need to send a message to the plaintiff's bar that we're not going to settle frivolous lawsuits. And so if you have a good case, we're going to fight it. If you want to go to court and our adjusters think that we have a good case and that there is no liability on the part of the city, we're going to go to court and we're going to fight that. And of course, I think this is one of the more important things. We provide expert risk management services. That's my department, and it's tailored to municipal government. I have a 15-person field staff, five field persons that go out and meet with the individual members. Tanya Price is your risk management representative, and she's actually scheduled 2 weeks to come out and meet with your staff and here at the city and work with them on the compact audit topic and questionnaires and all that good stuff. So we anticipate and respond to members' needs. We can do that because we, again, run the pool. Back before TRIA was enacted after 9/11, our board met and they said, we want terrorism coverage and we want it now. And so we were able to provide terrorism coverage long before the federal government even enacted TRIA. We're not subject to TRIA. We don't have to follow those rules. We just provide some terrorism coverage for our membership because it was necessary. We also provide some limited pollution coverage as well because the board wanted it. We address land use council challenges. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. We've done a lot of work with public records and the Public Disclosure Act, exclusions and expansions. That's been a huge drain on of finances on our membership, and so we help subsidize that, provide as much assistance and training as we can to help our members with the Public Disclosure Act, and also the Open Public Meetings Act. We provide a lot of training in that area as well. Just so that you know, we are the strongest pool in the state and one of the strongest in the nation. We have anywhere between a 95 and a 99% confidence level. That means that at any given time, if we closed our doors today, we would be able to pay 95% of all claims pending and incurred but not reported claims. As I said, we have a 12% reliance on the insurance industry. We do buy reinsurance, but they follow our form. And so basically the reinsurance company is a checkbook. They do what we tell them to do. They follow our coverage form. They don't tell us, no, we can't do this, we can't do that. We fund front the loss, and then we get reimbursed from the reinsurance company. Not to bore you with the specifics of insurance, but. And we have over $174 million in assets. That way we can afford to pay a $12 million judgment, such as we did for the city of Burien, and fund the defense costs over a 7-year period of time. That was not a good verdict for us, but we were able to pay that and get our money back from the reinsurers. You have to have that money to be able to do that. One of the things that makes us successful is our membership compact commitment. That means that each one of our members basically agrees that they will participate in risk management services and attend training and participate in the audit topic and participate in the city attorneys go to our training as well, and they're required to do that. We have an administrative budget of $1.2 million, and that funds our pre-defense program, our consultation program, and our member staff development programs. In this economy, this particular program really helps our membership. We found that it pays for itself 12-fold, because if we don't pay for our membership to get the training they need to reduce their losses, they're going to have losses, and it's going to cost us more money in the long term. So we fund the staff development, we reimburse for staff development, we do as much as we can to help keep those costs down for you, and we work with the city attorney to fund their training as well. As I said, we consistently win about 74% of all litigation, and we have gone to the U.S. Supreme Court 5 times and won, and they're all police cases that have set federal case precedent. We win at the U.S. Supreme Court level, and we tolerate the Ninth Circuit. Oftentimes get sent back to the state court, and then we win again. But our defense costs are typically about $6 million annually. That's a tremendous commitment to the membership, we realize, but it's important, as I said, to set good case law. We also subsidize your city attorney's budget. We work very closely with our city attorneys. We will assign defense counsel before you have a claim. We will assign defense counsel to a work with your city attorney on areas that may not be their expertise. And we help provide assistance in reviewing all your policies and procedures, ordinances, those kinds of things, all free of charge. Briefly, coverage and claims. You have $20 million per occurrence. For every time there's a loss, you have up to $20 million in coverage. That's occurrence-based coverage, not claims-based coverage. And that's very important for you to know as public officials, for your errors and omissions coverage, that when you go off the dais, that any decisions that you've made are always going to be covered. There's no danger that once you leave, you change carriers and somehow that coverage goes away. A lot of our competitors have occurrence-based coverage for everything but public officials, which doesn't make sense to us because we think, aren't you as important as the staff and you know, particularly the decisions that you make. So we think that's important. We handle about 1,800 claims annually. At any given time, probably about 300 litigation pending. As I said, we have an aggressive defense program, pre-defense program, and we look for coverage, not exclusions. So I wanted to just briefly tell you some of the issues that we typically see with counsels exposures, and we do a longer training, an actual training for counsel that is about all of the different types of exposures that counsels can meet. But some of the big ones I've touched on here, land use obviously is an area that a lot of cities have issues with. That is definitely an area that you're going to be responsible for. And arbitrary and capricious decisions are the issue for counsel. That was the Westmark versus City of Burien case that we had a $10 million verdict. The council was a no-growth council, and they would not, they just would not issue a permit for an apartment building that was zoned for that area. There was not a lot of defense for that. We tried to settle the case, but the council wouldn't settle either. And long story short, we ended up with a $10 million verdict. The judge was not happy. If you would like to read that verdict, it's very interesting. There's a lot of backdoor stuff going on that the council made a lot of mistakes in that particular case. None of those council people are on the council anymore. They're long gone now. Some of the other areas that we see that have problems are appearance of fairness doctrine for councils, for quasi-judicial matters. Whether you have a hearings examiner or you don't have a hearings examiner, the council is in its legislative role, and the best thing for councils to do is to concentrate on your zones and codes and comp plans so that you don't have issues, so that you don't have to have lots of hearings. Of course, we recommend professional hearing examiners because they provide impartial decisions, and we like to see appeals go to Superior Court. The city of Auburn had 7 major quasi-judicial issues challenged before that council finally got out of the land use arena and decided that they didn't want to do that anymore. There's so many due process issues in that area. Well, another area that that's kind of timely is moratoriums on adult entertainment shops, adult sex shops. We had two federal district court judges declare that it was per se illegal to not issue permits for adult sex shops. If you don't have the zoning, you better figure that out, because you cannot issue moratoriums while you figure that out, because they have said that it's illegal. Both in Bothell and Kenmore, we lost on both of those cases. It's a constitutional issue. People have the right to free speech, apparently. Adult dancing is considered free speech. So if you need more information on that, that's something that we can certainly provide you. In the area of personnel is an area where councils and mayors oftentimes have issues, and that's an area that we litigate a lot in with wrongful termination and discrimination. So it's just important that councils understand their role and mayors understand their role. There's lots of training out there for that, but in a nutshell, the council, you guys, are the strategic policymaking board, and that's your role, and the budget is your checks and balances. I'd encourage you to use the chain of command and not go directly to staff, because the mayor is in charge of the day-to-day operations. And I'll tell you that staff are well-trained. They have enhanced job rights. And the mayor, while he has to make these decisions, he can also be named personally liable. But council has immunity while they're on the dais when you stay in your role as a legislative body. You don't have immunity when you get involved in things on an individual basis. And you likely don't have coverage either, because that's not in your job description. And so you have to be very careful about that. Public employees are protected by due process rights. And so those are some of the areas that can be really problematic in personnel. Leaking executive session information, that's another big, big issue. The best advice I can give you on that is to keep quiet. Executive session is one of the few exceptions to the Public Records Act, where you can go into an executive session and discuss things in private. And the reason is that, like today, you have an executive session, I see, for purchase of land. If you couldn't go in and discuss that in private, you would never be able to buy a piece of land at a reasonable price, because people would just jack up the, you know, the cost. So that's why you're able to do that. Personnel is the same thing. Real estate matters, personnel is very limited, and potential litigation. Very limited scope of what you can discuss in an executive session. We've had issues with that in the past, where some councils have leaked information to the plaintiff's council, because they were best friends with the person that the city council was going to fire, or they were best friends with somebody's, you know, real estate buddy or whatever. And we've actually had to not be able to provide information on our defense strategy to the council, because somebody was leaking the information. That's not exactly the way that, you know, is the best way to do business. So the city can impose sanctions. WCA could impose sanctions. Plus, most cities have an ordinance that discusses ethical behavior for councils and what the due process is for those types of things. Taking matters into your own hands, that is a story about a council person who was basically very excited about a new park that the city was going to make. It was taking a little while for them to be able to make this purchase of the land. And so that council person jumped on his DC-8 tractor and went out and cleared the trailhead for this park before the city ever owned the land. It was a takings claim. And what do you think the price of that land did when, you know, basically the city had to purchase the land after it had already been developed? So don't do that. I'm sure you wouldn't, but use budget powers to affect change in your city. That's the power that you have. Limit opinions to official channels. As I said, you have authority and immunity when you're on the dais. No individual authority. So once you step off the dais, you don't have that immunity, so you have to be careful. The immunity is because you're voting as a group. So don't step outside your coverage, because we cover you for those errors and omissions that you provide, those decisions that you provide as a council. But if you are veering into the mayor's role or doing something else that isn't part of your coverage or part of your job, then you could be jeopardizing your coverage. One of the things that councils sometimes do, particularly new council members, they will make spontaneous decisions right on the dais. Those of you that have been council members for a long time probably have seen that happen, where you have community members come to the council meeting and they're charged up about something, and you want to solve that problem. So, you know, that person that wants a children at play sign, or they want a new stop sign at some particular intersection or whatever. And we've had council people actually say, you know, order the staff to put a stop sign up at that intersection, when the manual on traffic devices, uniform traffic devices, doesn't support that decision. So then, you know, you have to come back the next council meeting and say, gee, staff went out, traffic engineer went out, and, you know, we can't really put a stop sign there. So don't make promises or assurances that you can't really make. But do ask, do study the citizens' requests and ask staff for input off the record. I mean, and have the staff respond. You've got great staff, you've got great city staff, they know what they're doing, and they can report back to them. The last thing I wanted to tell you about is some of the areas that we've had a lot of claims in is email, Twitter, Facebook, and electronic communications. We always like to say, what does the E in electronic communication stand for? And that stands for evidence. That's where a lot of people go awry, and they end up sending information out on an email that they don't realize is subject to the Public Disclosure Act. Everything you do, everything you say, anything you write is subject to public disclosure. You have less rights as a council person than, you know, than your average citizen, because everything that you do is subject to public disclosure, same as me, so as a public employee. So use your city email address so that we can protect you, and we can basically say in that lawsuit that there's no reason why you would have to give up your personal email or have your computer subpoenaed, because you don't do business on your personal computer, you do business through your city email server. That way your public records a person can, you know, take all of the records right off of your city server, and that's it, it's a good done deal. Because they will use that, anything that you have. I don't know about you. I don't have anything on my personal computer that would be embarrassing, but I have a lot of pictures of my grandkids, and I don't necessarily want a judge going through all of my pictures in the camera review, you know, looking at everything. It kind of feels like a privacy violation. But that's what would happen if I was using my personal computer, because everything on there, they're going to have to look through everything to see if there's any kind of suit business. So just to protect yourself, make sure that you're not doing that. And also, we've had claims where there's been violations of the Open Public Meetings Act, because council creates a quorum online. So be thinking about that as well. You can talk to your city attorney about that, and she can give you more information. But that can be problematic as well. The whole idea about open discourse in a public meeting is that you're actually talking, you know, people can hear you. If you're on a email string and you're all talking but nobody else can get that, that can be a violation of the Open Public Meetings Act. Those are just some of the areas that we provide assistance in. There's many more, but if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. And if not, thank you for your time.
Questions?
I just got one. You know, and I'm just going down the list here and noticed that you have some cities here, and then you got the city's transportation benefit district also along with it. We've just recently formed a transportation benefit district. Then you would really recommend that we get our errors and omissions
coverage.
For any decisions that we make.
And the reason that you should probably do that is because, I mean, that's a decision that only the Transportation Benefit District, you know, the council can make, but it is a separate legal entity. So if there were claims arising out of your decisions as the Transportation Benefit District, we wouldn't be able to do anything for you. So you really do need to have your own separate coverage. We've recently made a, it's $2,500 for all, annually for all transportation benefit districts. It's just a flat fee. And there's no training or anything required because you're already, the council are already, you know, doing that for you. So, yeah, that is something that we do provide our members.
Any other questions? Well, you opened my eyes up. I didn't realize there was so much you were doing. I know you have a lot more on top of that, so. But I want to thank you for coming because I know every year this is a big line item in our budget. So.
Yeah, anything we can do to help you. We have all sorts of reimbursement programs, grant programs. We have what is our budget this year? $1.2 million just for member services. It's an administrative line item. So, and I've talked to Spencer and I've talked to Chief Dunnigan, and they're very well aware of that, but we reimburse for a lot of different programs, so we can help you out with getting some of that money back into services.
Yeah, I was surprised to hear one of the guys in the staff meeting today mentioned that they go to other things that are not related to you, and you reimburse for them going to those classes, so even if they don't present the program or whatever it is, our staff gets reimbursed if they file the information to you.
A lot of different conferences, association conferences, a lot of different trainings. We sponsor a lot of trainings, but we also co-sponsor a lot of trainings with a number of different organizations in the state. But for those things that we're not involved with, if it's something that we can help you with that is related to reducing risk, then we'll be happy to reimburse for that as well. So just give us a call.
Well, thank you again for coming.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. 2.03, investment report and decision of investment options. Spencer?
Thank you very much, Mayor and Council. I wanted to briefly talk about two different things. First of all, we have our monthly investment report. I'm going to go back to the first one. Okay, there it is. So we have our monthly investment report. I've prepared the regular attachments. The first one talks about shows the change in value for each one of the investment portfolios. One with LGIP, then there's one with Bank of America. And down here I'm also showing the balance of our local checking account. Then the other thing I wanted to bring up was some changes that we're thinking about making in our Bank of America to this investment portfolio right here. As you can see, we haven't been having the results that we want from that investment portfolio lately. I was talking with a gentleman from another city, and he said that over the last couple of months, he's felt like he's just been kicked in the teeth with his investments, just because they're really not performing that well. So it's good to know that we're not the only ones. Investments across the board aren't we're not seeing a lot of action there. In our case, with our Bank of America investment portfolio, we have a third-party management company. Bank of America acts as a manager of those funds. So we pay them, and then they go to the brokers, and they purchase the bonds through the brokers. In 2012, we paid just over $19,000 in the total cost. A large chunk of that was for the management fees. And if we can get rid of those management fees, that'll save us $19,000. Last year it was $19,300. This year it looks like it's going to be very similar. So if we can just get rid of that middleman, that'd be an automatic $19,000 that we'd be saving every year. We wouldn't have to spend every year. So in looking around at different cities, a lot of folks use a guy named Paul Jarvis, and he's a broker. So he's someone that we would go directly to purchase our bonds, and he's come very highly recommended from a lot of different municipalities. He's heavily involved in WFOA, the Washington Finance Officers Association. He teaches classes on municipal finance. This is something that he's done for a long, long time. Nacelle apparently used him when she was at the city of Marysville, and she spoke very highly. Anyway, so he comes highly recommended. I talked to our software company, Bias Software, about him, and they were the only ones that I got a different response from. I said, hey, have you ever heard about this guy? And they said, oh, that guy? And I thought, well, what do you mean by that kind of response? And really, ultimately, they didn't have any problems with him or his company. They just had a word of advice. They said, make sure that when you're purchasing bonds at different dollar values, we'll purchase, for example, a $1 million bond at 2.5 years, and then another at 3 years, and then four, two, two and a half, three, three and a half, four, laddering. That's called laddering our investments. Tobias said, make sure when we're laddering our investments, we're laddering them according to our needs, that we're looking into our future and seeing the potential big expenses that are coming down the pipe for us. We have things like the well project. That's going to be about $3 million. We have a Vactor truck, almost $500,000 that we're purchasing here, perhaps later this month, early next month. We've got some large purchases that are coming down the pike. And when we're working with a broker, they might have all kinds of great ideas. And if you purchase this bond, it's going to give you this kind of return in 3 years. And that's fantastic. But if we purchase a bond that's out 3 years and we need to liquidate that bond early for our own cash flow needs, we could potentially take a hit on that bond. And that's not what we want to do. So when we're working with our broker, we'll make sure that we're laddering our bonds to meet our needs. Tomorrow afternoon, I'm meeting with the finance committee, and we're going to talk about some of the needs that we know about, as well as other potential needs that might be coming down the pipe. Those are things that we need to consider when we're selecting the dollar amount and the maturity dates. How many years out we want to tie up that money. So I just wanted to bring up to speed. There's no, with the city code, there's no official action or ordinance required by council to make some of these changes. But I wanted to let you know that this is what we're thinking about doing, and these are some of the reasons why. And I'm certainly involving the finance committee. They're very interested in these changes. We have an investment policy that requires that we get a bunch of different pieces of information from brokers and investment management companies if we're going to go with them. And I've received all that information from Paul Jarvis, so we're good to go. We're good to go there. The next step is just considering the size of bonds, considering the laddering technique that would work for our city and our needs, and we'll go from there. So here next month or the month after, you'll probably see something different. Instead of Bank of America, it'll be the funds will be held in a safekeeping account just across the street with our normal checking account with the U.S. Bank. So that's the deal. Are there any other questions? There are a lot of other particulars, obviously. These are some broad strokes that I've been giving you tonight. And in the finance committee, we'll go into quite a few more details. But I can certainly take any questions that you might have.
What was our income last year?
Last year?
Our investments.
$31,700.
Yeah, this is this year so far. I don't have last year's right off the top of my head. I can get that for you.
And this is before the $19,000 comes out.
Yes. Yeah. This is the bank.
We're paying them much more than what is on our return.
Yeah.
And really have to compliment you working this out and catching it and finding a different way that we can actually save that kind of money. And my understanding is too is that Bank of America has got this spread out and a little over 30 different bonds.
37.
And we could get a lot better return if we narrow that down to about 7 or 8.
Yeah, we'll probably have 4 to 6. Yeah, different bonds.
So the risk factor, then, you still have the same state requirements as far as the bonds things.
Yeah, we'll still have all the same investing requirements that we have now. But when we're in an environment where our returns are so small anyway, the extra $19,000 that we pay, that almost zeroes out the returns that we get on this portfolio. You can kind of see it's been going back and forth here. Positive 5,000, positive 4, negative almost 2,000, positive 5, negative 3. We shouldn't see negative returns on our investments when we have $4.7 million in that particular portfolio.
Any questions? Okay, thank you, Scott. Okay, 2.04, ceremonial scissors policy change or review, I should say. Spencer again.
About 2 years ago, we enacted a policy regarding our ceremonial scissors. Those are those great big gold scissors that we have. The way the policy reads right now, if someone, a business moves into town, if they want to use those scissors for a ribbon cutting ceremony, they pay $20 to rent those scissors. And that's not refundable. It's just $20 fee to rent those scissors. The question has been raised recently, is that something that we really want to charge for? Is it really inviting to businesses and organizations that want to have these kinds of ceremonies? So I put together there are two different attachments to this agenda memo. One is the policy as it's written right now. I put together another agenda memo to give some other options if we wanted to do away with that fee. We could do a deposit, a refundable deposit. So they come in, they pay some money, they use the scissors, then the money is returned to them when they return the scissors. And this is just something that I wanted to bring up to you as just for your consideration. We have a bunch of different options, a bunch of different things that we can do. But I submit that for your consideration.
Can I make a comment on this? Yeah, might give you a little history on those scissors. We purchased those scissors from the city, or at least the city purchased them. And the first time they were used was for our centennial out here front door when we did our bricklaying and whatnot, and we used those scissors for that purpose. Since that time, I think McCain's used them one time, the Cooley Corridor used them twice, and then the other time was used out here at Waterhole. Like you say, they're $20. We had comments both ways. I don't think it's overly outrageous to pay the $20, but some people say, well, gee, we can't do that, you know. So I guess it's kind of in the air whether you want to or not. I do see in there you're going to change it from the deposit of $20 to $50, and then that would be returned when the scissors are returned after the, not later than the 3-day period. So I don't know. It's whichever way you think, I guess. But I don't think it's outrageous to pay that $20. I mean, it's no big deal. But whatever.
Any comments? Leave as is, I guess. Or one of the organizations in town was a very good policy. As far as Exxon, I visited with them a little bit. They had no issue with paying the $20. It's pretty cheap, you know, for a big set of scissors about like that. You know, they didn't have an issue with it as far as Exxon, I guess. But.
So what would it cost somebody to rent one?
Well, it would cost them $211 at least to buy them. I don't know if you could rent them from anywhere, but I think the cost of the scissors was $211 back when they bought them several years ago, which is probably more now.
standing, leave it alone, so I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess you got your answer there.
Thank you.
Okay, committee reports, do we have any committee reports today?
I just, one, from the Adams County Development Council. We have been working really hard on trying to get Adams County into the foreign trade zone. About 6 years ago, Port of Moses Lake offered a lot of the counties and jurisdictions within a 90-mile driving distance to get in to the foreign trade zone, to create a foreign trade zone. And Adams County was one of them, is the only county that opted out at the time. But we met with the county commissioners last week, and the Port District has agreed to get into the, to create Adams County as a foreign trade zone, is roughly about $7,500 in attorney's fees. And the Port District has agreed to pay third. The Adams County Development Council has agreed to pay third. And we talked to the county last week, and it's looking really good. They were supposed to talk about it this week, and we're hoping to get that process done.
Committee reports. Okay, unfinished business. Everybody looks on your paperwork here. You'll see the schedule for the committees that are coming up for the putting together our budget. You notice there's different colors right underneath the 2014 budget calendar. There's purple, tan, and green, I think that is. So those are your days and stuff, and who's on it. So that's, we tried to make it as simple as possible. So if you have any questions, just call into City Hall, and I believe Jennifer would be a good person to go to on that one. You're pretty much on that one, aren't you? So you can get a hold of Jennifer there, and she'll help you if you have any discussions like there. Like I said, I'll try to get all of them this year. Any questions on what that looks like? Okay. What else do we have here? Okay, any other unfinished business? Okay, new business. Chief Dennegan is requesting that he needs a somebody from the council involved in the Adams County Local Emergency Planning Committee. We've got to have a council member on that. How often do they meet? You know?
Currently, they're looking at once a quarter.
Once a quarter. Do they meet here? Do they meet back and forth?
And they meet down at the fire station.
Okay. So I guess we're looking for a volunteer that'd be interested in being involved in that.
Steve, I think I was asked about that about a year ago. And I said I would do it, but I never have. I was told that you would supply all the information, and I never have heard anything. So I guess
there's
that's
the
information.
Right there.
Okay, so you still have to use the same.
Yes. I think so.
Good.
We'll put you on the email.
Okay. Great.
Thanks, Ken. Appreciate you being involved like that. So.
I was going to nominate him anyways. Taking a step forward.
He needs,
there you go.
He needs one more committee.
Yeah. Any other new business? Okay, Mayor's announcements. The Audit Finance Committee will be meeting on Wednesday at noon. So everybody knows that's on that one. Pet Rescue is having a luncheon on September 11th at 1 p.m. Mayor and Council have been invited. Your tickets are on your folder. So I guess they evidently gave us some tickets. And I'm not sure where that's at. Let's find out.
Okay.
Anybody know where it's at? Is that the new shelter? Oh, okay. Good. Okay, so Council. Encourage everybody to come if they can. We're doing quite a job out there, I know that much. So that's on September 11th at 1. Any other new business before we go into executive session? Okay, then council will now adjourn into executive session pursuant RCW 42.30.110, parentheses 1, parentheses B, to consider the selection of a site or acquisition of real estate by lease or purchase. The executive session is expected to last 15 minutes. No action will be taken during the executive session, so I need to have everybody but Larry, Julius leave, and make sure you turn off that also, and that'll be about for 15 minutes.